ॐ ब्रह्मानन्दं परमसुखदं केवलं ज्ञानमूर्तिं द्वन्द्वातीतं गगनसदृशं तत्त्वमस्यादिलक्ष्यम् एकं नित्यं विमलमचलं सर्वधि साक्षिभूतं भावातीतं त्रिगुणरहितं सद्गुरुं तं नमामि. ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै. ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः. हरिः ॐ श्रीगुरुभ्यो नमः. हरिः ॐ ॐ समस्तजनकल्याणे निरतं करुणामयं नमामि चिन्मयं देवं सद्गुरुं ब्रह्मविद्वरं सद्गुरुं ब्रह्मविद्वरम्. Okay, Hari Om, and a very happy new year to those of you whom I haven't seen in the previous classes. We started on Friday, as you know, this year. And as promised, I did tell you that verse 20, I explained it, and that explanation is absolutely complete and correct. Okay, don't think there was anything wrong with it. But because I do have the luxury of time, if this was a yajna setting, that is what I would have said, and that would have been the end of the chapter. And even though, like, officially I ended the chapter, there is a lot that we can learn from this verse. I have learned a lot. I'm going to share it with you. And, I hope that you will enjoy it as much. I enjoyed studying it and doing mananam on it. I hope you also enjoy it. If some of you find it a bit difficult, do not worry. There is nothing. Whatever I've explained in the previous class is absolutely enough. So we are going to, what they say, do a deep dive in this verse. And to do a deep dive, we go into every single word and analyze it. And the two words that we are going to start with today are the two names of Arjun, which are the last words in both lines, Anagha and Bharata. I've already told you, Anagha means sinless, and Bharata means Bha, light, Rata, reveling in light. One who revels in light means knowledge, in knowledge. Let's start with Bharata. Let's think about it a little bit more. Bharata, yes, it means reveling in knowledge, but it also means Bharat Kulotpanna. Bharat Kula Utpanna. Utpanna, born, come out of, Kula, family. Come out of the family of King Bharat. So we see who this Bharat is. Those of you who have read Bhagavad Puran, Bharat, this King Bharat, from whom this lineage has come, Arjuna's family, that is his forefather, he is who became famous as Jada Bharata. So the story of Bharat is such that Raja Bharat, he ruled his kingdom, and then he took Vanaprastha, as kings used to do, people used to do in those days. When they reached Grihastha Ashram, when it was over for them, then they would go to the Vana. They would actually physically go, Vanaprastha, and then do meditation and spend their life in thinking and meditating on the truth. And that is what he was doing, and spending his life in the ashram, living like an ascetic, everything. And he was, it is said, very close to realization. And one day he was taking a bath in the river, near the river. They had to go to the river. And there was a pregnant deer. A deer was there. She was pregnant. She had come there to drink water from the river. What happened was there was a lion who roared loudly somewhere. It's a forest, you know. And hearing that loud roar, this mother deer, she got up like a heart attack. And she actually died, but before she died, she gives birth to this baby deer. she's full pregnant. So she gives birth and she dies because of that frightful roar. Now, this little baby is there. And now this king, I mean, the ascetic, Bharat, sees the baby. And of course, he thinks, oh my God, now who's going to look after the baby? So he brings that baby deer home. I believe Doe, right? It's called Doe, D-O-E. So he brings the baby deer home, means to his ashram. But, and of course, it's a baby. So of course, it has to give it milk and all. But in that process, he gets attached to the deer. So when he's meditating, you know, it's a baby. So the deer is playing in his lap. And then, you know, all that kind of things which grandmothers do with grandchildren, babies. Okay, so then I don't have to explain too much. Then everybody understands. Of course, maybe not Prem Sai, but you know, whereas there's a little baby, they will understand. Anyway, so this baby, you know, is jumping around here and there and playing in his lap. So he gets attached. Now what happens is when his time comes for departure, as we have heard in chapter 8, Bhagwan said in chapter 8, whatever last thought you have, you will come. So the last thought that arises in his mind is, who will look after this baby when I'm gone? And because of that thought, he gets birth in the body of a deer. However, because of all the tapasya, the tapas that he had done, he remembers, the jiva remembers that, oh my God, you know, at the last moment, I made a mistake. Otherwise, I would have been realized. And he decides that deer, that jiva in the body of the deer, okay, remembering the previous birth, decides that I am never going to get attached now because that is what caused my downfall. And so when his term is over, that body prarabdha is over of the deer, he comes back into human birth. And as a human being, he is born in a family of brothers and parents and all that. Right from childhood, that jiva remembers his previous two births, remembers that he was in a deer body, remembers that he was the king. So he remembers his pledge that I will never get attached to anything. So right from childhood, this child used to be as if he didn't know anything. Whatever his parents told him, he will do the opposite. So finally, the parents, you know, stopped telling him anything. He never went to school. He never studied anything. Nothing. He does nothing. And then the parents die one day. And then he's a grown-up person by then. And his brothers are all married. He doesn't get married. And his sisters-in-law are telling him things to do. And he will just go and do, purposely, he will do the opposite. Purposely. So one day the sisters-in-law get very frustrated and they say, all we are doing is feeding him. He doesn't work and he doesn't do any work in the house. He doesn't. And then he doesn't. And if he's told to do something, he will do it wrong. So then, you know, they say, no, throw him out of the house. So the brothers throw him out of the house. And that's exactly what he wanted. Because he was doing it on purpose. He didn't want anybody getting attached to him and he didn't want to get attached to anybody because he said, this is the mistake that I have made. So he is wandering and he comes to, they call him Jada Bharat. Jada is inert. They're like, what is this? He's not working. He's not, you know, doing anything right. He's not studying. He's not nothing. So Jada Bharat. So Jada Bharat then, he's roaming around freely. He's happy, you know, like he's realized and then he's realized. Now he's not getting attached to anybody. So one day he's sitting under a tree. It so happens that he was just sitting under a tree. And the king of that kingdom was going in a palanquin to an ashram to study Brahma Vidya. And what happens is that one of the people who are carrying the palanquin, you know, there are at least four people carrying, he falls ill, gets injured, something like that. So now they need a fourth person to carry this king. And then this guy is just sitting under the tree doing nothing and seems very healthy and young and everything. So the king says, go ask him, you know, like, because I have to go. I want to go, you know, for studies of Vedanta, I'm going. So I have to go to this ashram. So you get hold of this guy. So they tell him, you know, will you? He says, okay, fine. What Jada Bharat is then doing, he is holding one of the you know, supports on his shoulder. Every time he sees an ant, he will jump over that ant. Every time he sees some insect here, he will jump over that. So now this guy is hopping, you know, and now what is going to happen to the palanquin when one person is just hopping like that? So the king gets really mad, you know, what is this? You know, you don't know how to even walk properly. Like, don't you know that you're carrying me? You're carrying the palanquin. And Jada Bharat says, this is one lump of clay carrying another lump of clay. He says that. And the king hears. King hears this. What did he mean? Body is a lump of clay. What is the king? Nothing but a lump of clay. Body is lump. So one lump is carrying another lump. But the king was intelligent enough to understand what he meant. If there was somebody else, they would have said, what, you're calling me a lump of clay? And what is this and all that? King was intelligent enough. So he realizes that this is not an ordinary person. This is a realized master. So he gets down from the palanquin and he says, why do I need to go to that ashram? I know that you are the realized master and I will now stay at your feet and study, do the studies. Now, why are we telling this story or why are we listening to this story? Bhagwan is calling him Bharat, reminding him of his lineage. I think I told you one, like there is one person here, 8 generations Indian army. Then he was the 9th generation and he refused to go into the Indian army, right? So there is a lineage, there is a family lineage, there is a tradition. You belong to a very great family. You belong to a family. And this Raja Bharat, from him, this Bharat name has come up, by the way. India is called Bharat from this Raja Bharat. So such a great, imagine, he must have been really great if the whole land is now named after him. You belong to such a great tradition. You belong to such a great family, a great lineage, indicating to him, you have the qualification for this knowledge. So his adhikara is indicated in that word. That Arjun, you are qualified. Because you belong to the lineage of realized master, of a realized master. So you're qualified. Now, but another name has been used. But why is Bhagwan using 2 names? So if we say that, okay, the tradition is there and that is the only qualification that is required, really may not be. Like I told you, 8 generations Indian army, yes, that by tradition, this 9th generation is supposed to be going into the army, but his vasanas are not in that Indian army. So only tradition, only family, only lineage is not enough to be a complete adhikari of this knowledge. What else is required is purity of mind. Anagha, I told you, is sinless. Sin at this level is the arrogance of individuality, which has to be surrendered for this knowledge. And Arjun has already done it. When did he do it? Chapter 2. When he said, please accept me as your disciple and I surrender at your feet. So I surrender means who surrenders? The ego is surrendered. So Arjun has both. And this is what Bhagwan is reminding him. So these 2 words are indicating the adhikara, the qualification of the student. Also, because there is no Arjun Uvacha in this chapter, these 2 words also are telling us that Arjun is involved. The chapter is being told to Arjun by saying, it's not like somebody else is there. Because, oh, Arjun didn't ask anything. Was Arjun there or not? No. He was there. It was meant for him. And these 2 words are used. These 2 names are used. I told you in every verse, there are so many names that are used for Bhagwan also and for Arjun also. And each name has its own significance as per the context. So in this verse, the context is you have the tradition, you have the lineage, and you have the purity of mind. The individuality has been surrendered. Your ego has been surrendered, and therefore you are qualified. This knowing our own tradition, you know, when we know that we belong to such a great family or whatever, it will prevent us from doing something wrong in the present. we must not have the arrogance. See, if I have the arrogance of, oh, I belong to such a great family, you know, now I can do whatever, because now my name is there, like I belong to this great family, I can do anything I want. It shouldn't be like that. I belong to this great family. I must not do something which will taint my family's name. That is why we should know our lineage, our family, our, you know, whatever our forefathers have done, etc., etc. Okay, so this is the significance of these two names. Then we go to Guhyatamam. Iti word, iti actually means full stop. So actually, iti means by using iti, which I would have told you at the very end of chapter, end of story, end of shastra. That is what iti means here. That this complete, I have told you, that's it. There is nothing further than this in Vedanta. This is what that iti signifies. Should actually be, iti word itself means full stop. There is no dot in Sanskrit language. Like in English, you'll put a dot, or in Hindi or Marathi, you put a line. There is no such thing in Sanskrit. They'll say, and then they'll say iti means finished. Iti means full stop. Okay. Guhyatamam, I told you, guhyatamam, superlative. Guhyam, guhyataram, guhyatamam. Like good, better, best. So what is guhyam? Now let's see. Guhyam is a secret. Guhyataram is a better kept secret. And guhyatamam is the most secret. Most secret. And I already told you, secret is something which you don't tell every single Tom, Dick, and Harry. When I say I'm going to tell you a secret, then you immediately, the thought will come to your mind, oh, she's telling us something which she's probably not told many people, right? Secret. So what Bhagwan here is not talking about, and which is not a secret, which is the lowest level, lower than Guhyam, is those people who consider themselves as the body. Bhagavan is not talking about those people here at all. Bhagavad Gita is not. If you consider Charvaks, you know, they consider themselves as a body. So what happens is, before my birth, there was nothing. And after my death, there will be nothing. So I can do whatever that I want in this life. And that's it. And that is not a secret at all. That everybody, maximum number of people are doing that. So that's very widespread sort of feeling that is. Okay. So Guhyam is that where this person is now considering himself to be something other than the body, Jiva. This is at the level of the Jiva, Guhyam. So it is a secret, because even this much people, not too many people, means not too many people, most of the people think that they are the body, and that after death, everything is going to be finished. Whereas there are people who think that they are the Jiva. So what is happening for them is, Jiva is real. World is also real. Karma becomes real. Okay. So what they are doing is, they are doing things to achieve things. And they say, hey, I do and I achieve. I achieved. I did and I got. So what's anything got to do with anything? I did, I got. So that is Guhyam. That level. The next level, which is Guhyataram, is where you bring devotion or upasana into the picture. So this Jiva who was thinking that, hey, I did and I got, what has God got to do with it? He starts recognizing the presence of a higher entity, which is Ishvara, Karma Phala Data. So this Jiva now thinks or knows that, you know what, I have put in effort and I will put in effort, but final result, there is somebody else is there who has a hand in this final result. So there is a Karma Phala Data, there is an Ishvara, and he is the one. So what happens is, when he recognizes the presence of this higher entity, his attention now goes, he starts praying that, oh Lord, you know, I am doing this, I'm going to get into this project, but please help me get success. Whereas in Guhyam, he's saying, I'm going to do and I will get. What is there? So when you bring Ishvara into the picture, then there are, this is a greater secret because there are fewer people who are doing this. You understand? The greater the secret, the fewer people know it. That is what it is. So what is not a secret is I am the body. What is a secret is that I am Jiva, but I am real, world is real, and I am acting, and this is why I'm getting results. What has God got to do with it? Now, the third level, which is even fewer people recognize, is the presence of karma faladatta. So in the level, at the level of Guhyam, it is Jiva in world, whereas in Guhyataram, it is Jiva in Ishwara. Because now Ishwara is brought into the picture. And Guhyatamam is where the substratum is recognized. Jiva is false, Ishwara is false, and only the substratum is real. And that's why this is Guhyatamam. Very, very few people know this. Extremely. And even those people who have heard this, very difficult for them to grasp it. So this is what Guhyatam, that's why Bhagavan says, Guhyat, this is the most well-kept secret, that there is really no Jiva. There is really no Ishwara. They are only a, even the world, it is only a superimposition on that substratum, which is only real. And this Guhyatamam Shastra, he has explained in this chapter. Did he not say? Dvavimau Purusha Ulloke, right? He said there are two Purushas. There is Jiva, there is Ishwara, but the Uttama Purusha is beyond both of them. So this is the greatest kept secret that he has explained. Shastra. Shastra means science. Shastra, ordinarily translated, is science. Shastra has two aspects. The word Shastra breaks into Shasanat Shastra, and it also breaks into Shamsanat Shastra. Shamsanat Shastra. So let's take a material example, like in the material world. There is a subject, chemistry. Okay? Physics, whatever you can take. Chemistry is, there is one aspect of the knowledge of chemistry. So what is chemistry? The chemicals, the metals, the this, the that, everything. But then there is another aspect, which is the governing laws for those metals. Like, hydrochloric acid or sulfuric acid, but if you're studying in chemistry, then there is an injunction or do's and don'ts is, don't put your finger in hydrochloric acid. Don't try to drink it. Hydrochloric acid is like transparent, you know, I've seen it. So don't try to drink it, right? So this science, if it is to be a complete science, it has to have, shasana is what? Rules, governance, regulations, injunctions, do's and don'ts. So shastra has to have these two aspects. One is the do's and don'ts, and one is the knowledge aspect. So Shasana Shastra is the do's and don'ts. And Shamsana Shastra is the knowledge, the information, the knowledge. Now, if Bhagavan is calling, and I told you this even in the introduction, that this chapter is a complete Shastra, if Bhagavan is saying, then in this chapter, we have to have do's and don'ts. And Bhagavan is calling it. So chapter has to have, because we are only talking about this chapter. Do's and don'ts, and it has to have the knowledge. Now, first of all, these do's and don'ts in the context of Vedanta, like in the context of chemistry, it would have to come from a book of chemistry. You cannot have do's and don'ts for chemistry in a book of physics. So for this Vedantic Shastra, where will the do's and don'ts come from? From Vedas, from the scriptures. So right in the first verse, he said, the one who knows the unchanging principle in the changing world is a knower of the Vedas, indicating that all this thing has come from the Vedas. Because if it is coming from somewhere else, then we don't have to follow that. Everything has to come from the Vedas. The knowledge aspect also has to come from the Vedas, and the injunctions also have to come from the Vedas. And that's what he indicated in verse number one. Then in verse number two, he indicated Dharma Shastra. What did he say? This world is kept alive by the karmas that are being done by all the jivas. Remember? the world is, the branches are spreading sideways and upwards and downwards and everything. And who is keeping this world going is all the jivas because of the karmas. So dharma shastra, karmas, and then what? Karmas giving results. So obviously good karmas giving good results, bad karmas giving bad results. So what is the do for us here? Do good karma, na? So that is another do's, that is another thing, shastra. Okay, now, how do I do these actions? Again, there is another do. Asanga shastrena dridena chitva. With complete detachment, all actions to be done with complete detachment. Okay, and how else? With surrender to God. Prapadde. Surrendering to me. Offering all actions to me. These actions must be, that is dharma shastra, that anything to do with action falling in dharma shastra. Then how do I behave in this world? Nirmana moha jita sanga doshaha adhyatma nitya vinivritta kamaha. Another instruction. So this is how he's given the instructions to us. Okay, in this chapter only, we're sticking to only this chapter, because this chapter he has called Shastra. Of course, entire Bhagavad Gita is a Shastra only. But because this is why this chapter becomes most important. That's why I told you, that's why they say, you just chant this chapter 5 minutes. That's it. It's like you've chanted the whole Gita. There's no need to chant all 700 verses. Of course, if you want to, you can, but nobody has the time in Kali Yuga to do 3 hours of chanting every day. So 5 minutes. Shastra. Okay. So this is the do's and don'ts. Then the knowledge aspect of it. What is the knowledge aspect of it? Oh, 1 second. There's, I think, one more. Yeah. Nirmana moha. Okay. That's it. Then there is the knowledge aspect of it. So knowledge of what? Jiva, Ishvara and Jagata. So where did he give the knowledge of jiva in this chapter? Mama eva ausha jivaha. That's where he gave the knowledge. Then Ishvara. What did he say? Sarvasya cha aham riddhi sannivishtaha. I am seated in the hearts of all beings. Describing Ishvara. Okay. And Jagata. He said, this whole thing is seen, but it has no legs to stand on. So that is why this chapter is a shastra in itself. It is giving us the do's and don'ts, how to behave in this world, and it is giving us the knowledge of the world, of jiva, who I am, who is Ishvara, and who is the world, what is the world. All right? Shastram idam uktam maya. Next is idam uktam maya. Uktam said, maya by me. This guhyatamam shastra, this great, 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 great secret, this shastra has been said by me. Just as the student has to have a qualification, the speaker also must be qualified to speak. So you can't have a physics PhD speaking on chemistry. You can't. So here, what he's saying is, what is indicating to us is his qualification. There are 2-3 types of speakers also. See, this Bhagavad Gita and everything is, you take theology in college, in university, there are professors teaching this. It's not like only Veda, but professor is doing it for what? For his belly, right? For money. He's not doing it for philosophy. There are people who are studying the poetry out of Bhagavad Gita, the grammar, the language, the this, the that, but philosophy. So that is one type of a speaker. There is another type of a speaker who is, you know, he has the information, and I've mentioned this to you. If when things happen to other people, immediate Vedanta flow. Don't worry, body is dead, soul doesn't die. And then when it happens to me, myself, then I am in sixes and sevens. So there is information, but there is no, it has not gone in. That is also another type of speaker. They speak too. They actually speak better probably than even me, because they have the knowledge, they have the information, right? So that is another type of a speaker. Then there is a third type of a speaker who is always worried about the audience. She's like, oh, What did the audience think of me? What did the audience this thing? Is it, so there is a dependency on the audience of the speaker, because the speaker's happiness is coming from the happiness of the, if the audience is happy, he's happy. Otherwise, he's not happy. And then the fourth kind is very simply put, if you want information, I mean, say if you want information about me, in me means where I was born, whatever, etc. Who is the best person to ask? Me, you know. You are, so now this one is being said by Purushottama. Bhagwan himself is speaking about himself. So who can be a better qualified speaker to tell his own biography? That's why this idam uktam maya, maya idam uktam means qualification of the speaker. That the speaker also is equally qualified. This is spoken by me. And who am I? Not Krishna. Not Krishna. I am that Supreme Self, that Parabrahman in the form of Krishna. In this form, telling you. So who can be most qualified to talk about Brahman is Brahman himself. So his qualification of the speaker. Or etat buddhva buddhiman syat. So etat buddhva, having known thus. This buddhva and buddhi, both these words are coming from the verbal root buddha. Buddha, loosely translated, means to know. Buddha is to know. But knowing in the material world is always creating a triad. There, unless there is a triad, knowledge doesn't happen in the material world. So what is the triad? Me, the subject, chemistry as the object, and then the me knowing that subject. So this triad which is there, knowledge which is giving you an objective experience, right? So suppose if I'm studying chemistry or physics or math or whatever, I come to know about that subject. So knowledge which is giving you an objective experience is mithya. Why? Why is it mithya? Because who is the subject? Jiva is the subject. Jiva is mithya. Who is the object? Chemistry is the object. It is the world. World is mithya. Now, mithya, studying mithya, how can the knowing be real? So any knowledge which is giving you an objective experience is mithya. This buddhva is not referring to that. This buddhva, this buddha, this knowing is a knowing which is happening without the creation of the triad. There is no triad being created here. There is no knower. There is no known. There is no knowing. So that knowledge which gives you a subjective experience. What is this experience? Aham Brahmasmi. Aham Brahmasmi is the subjective experience. All that alone is real. And when I say real, that which is same in the three periods of time. So this Buddha, even though it means known, it should be understood as a subjective. Etat Buddha, not like, oh, now I heard that I am Brahman. Okay, now I am Buddhiman. No, no. You only heard it. That doesn't make you Buddhiman. This Buddhiman refers to that knowledge which has given you a subjective experience, not an objective one, because that is mithya. Etat buddhva buddhiman syat. So he becomes buddhiman. He is a real buddhiman. Just like in verse 1, Bhagwan said, who is the real knower of the Vedas? One who is by hearted, memorized it. I told you, Bhagavad Gita, front chapter 1 to 18, and from 18 to 1, like that also there are people who have apparently memorized, not me. I couldn't do it. I don't even know from A to Z. They know from A to Z and Z to A. Are they the knower of the Vedas? Or the one who knows, he may not have read the Bhagavad Gita, but he knows that this changing world has an unchanging substratum. And that substratum is nothing but me. Not only to know, that is an objective knowing. Okay, this world is there and now this, there is an unchanging substratum. that is also not buddhiman. If you recognize that that substratum, you are the one that is the substratum of this entire world, that is a buddhiman. So that's why he says, etat buddhva, having known thus. Thus means what? Having known thus means what? Having had a subjective experience, that person is called, is known as a buddhiman. Okay? And why should I become a buddhiman? Kritakratyascha Bharata. Kritakratya. This word is very important. Kritakratya means there are two aspects to it. Swami Vidyaranya has done it very well. So kritakratya means having done whatever is to be done and having achieved whatever is to be achieved. This is a final stage. So having done whatever is to be done means there is nothing more to be done. Absolutely nothing more to be done. Having achieved whatever that I wanted to achieve, I have achieved. And kritakritya word can only come when there is realization of the self. Because if you, anything in the material world, there will be something up higher than you, whatever you have achieved. You will become the CEO of your company, then you realize, oh, but my company is smaller than that company. So I need to become CEO of that company now. You will always be on the ladder. You'll be somewhere in the middle. You will never reach the top of the ladder. You cannot become kritakritya in any kind of material pursuit. Kritakritya can be achieved only when you realize the self, because there is nothing paramam, guhyatamam, right? So there is nothing else to be achieved. All right? Then, this kritakritya, we can also in our life, day-to-day life, you can achieve it, kritakritya. So for kritakritya, to become kritakritya, means having done whatever I've done. You know, the thing that I was thinking was, generally parents, you know, when their children, they really make it up there, they achieve their goals and all that, then the parents feel, okay, I have done whatever that I could do, I did. You know, I have done. That feeling of satisfaction is there when the children just, you know, they're in their own whatever jobs and this and that and everything. So for us as spiritual seekers, there are three debts that not only spiritual seekers, everybody has these debts. But again, I'll explain again a little bit more. Anyway, the three debts are Pitru Rana, Nru Rana, Nru, and Rishi Rana. Rana is debt. Pitru Rana is debt to the parents. Why is there a debt to the parents? Because they are the ones that have given us this body. Why is it so important to get the body? We saw in Vivek Churamani that the human body is extremely rare. And we also heard that only through this human body can final realization be achieved. Therefore, this body becomes very important. And who has given us this body is the parents. The jiva, I told you many, many times, the jiva does not belong to the parents. The jiva is sanatana. It is part of Bhagwan. So you cannot say that I created jiva. No parent can create jiva. No parent has created jiva, and no parent will ever create jiva in the future also. But yes, body, definitely. So that rana is there, and that rana can be repaid by taking care of the parents, by, you know, not doing something that will taint their name. And that debt continues till the parents are alive. So there is an end to the debt. As long as the parents are there, the debt is there. Once the parents are not there, this debt is. So if you have treated them properly and have done everything for them, etc., etc., then you are kritakritya as far as the Pitru Rana is concerned. So that kritakritya, you've done whatever you could do for the parents. You have achieved whatever it is to be achieved. Now they are not there. Now you are free of that debt. Nru Rana is debt to the society, to the totality. See, individual, that's why I told you, sarve bhavati, you know, you cannot say that only, you know, let me be safe, you know, that now I'm living in a condo, who cares, anything happens to the rest of the people in the condo as long as, I cannot live without them. We cannot live without, individual cannot live without society. We need the society. So that debt is there, and that can be repaid by voluntary work, charity, giving time, giving advice, giving money if possible. And the least we can do is pray na, free me. That's why I told you, sarve bhavantu phukat me. You know, like, why not just change your thought? You know that, okay, sarve means entire universe. Doesn't cost us anything. We are not even willing to do that. You know, people are like, only me, my family, and okay, maybe extended family, but you know what, her I don't like, so forget her. There are people, I'm telling you, people are like, so as spiritual seekers, we are mudha, we are at least little bit high. Otherwise, what is the difference between them and us? So we must always pray for the entire universe. And nothing, we're not doing anything special. Just in your own little altar, in your mind, you just, you know, nrirana. So nrirana remains until your sense of individuality remains. Which means basically, if you realize the Supreme Self, that will end. So nrirana remains. So for us, we can say, as long as I can afford to give money, as long as I can give time, as long as I can help somebody, you know, with something, I will do it. Then there'll be a time maybe I may not be able to, you know, help somebody physically. I may not be able to give them a ride. I may not be able to do certain things. Then that's okay. But that should be there. And Rishi Rana, Rishi is the sages who have actually got, these Vedas have come in the higher states of meditation. So the debt to the Rishi is they have given us this knowledge. So one aspect of this debt is to study this knowledge. See, they are giving this for our highest good. They have, and they are not asking, nobody is telling us, please come and study and all that. They're not asking, but they have given it to us. They have shown us the path. They have told us these lofty things. Then our job is to study. And the other aspect is our job is to then teach, propagate. So, you know, that's why they say that the disciple, the guru always loves his disciple more than his devotee, it seems. More than his bhakta. See, guru has, there is devotee who is all over him, love, love, love. And then there is disciple who submits to discipline. And the guru loves his disciple more. Why? Because he knows that the disciple is going to go propagate my knowledge. This knowledge, not my knowledge, but this knowledge. Whereas the devotee is only, you know, whatever, right? Making garland for guru. And we used to have one lady, she used to make this huge tulsi ka garland Swami Tejomayan ji ke liye. Hum log jo sandipani mein the, sachi, I'm telling you, itna bada haar leke wo aake, thada karke she would put it. We used to be sitting there, you know, she put it in Swami Tejomayan ji. That is devotee. Fine, Swami Tejomayan ji, next minute, take out Meera. Then Meera was there, you know, who was assisting. Meera. Now, they can't even put it to Bhagwan or anything, because she already put it. She would, every time she would do that, she would bring this huge har. So that is devotee. So the Rishi Rana is, at least the minimum thing is for us to study this knowledge. That is how we repay. Now, in this Pitru Rana, Nru Rana, and Rishi Rana, Pitru Rana falls under Guhyam. Guhyam. Okay. And Nrurana falls under Guhyataram. Because there are many people who will look after the parents. But when it comes to doing charity, you know, helping others, why should I help? I remember, you know, in our Maharashtrian circle, there is an accountant, huge, big guy. Big guy means very senior. So one of the Marathi families, you know, they said, we are all friends now in the Diwali program and all, we would meet and talk and everything. So one person phoned him at home, you know, because now we know the phone, and asked him for advice, tax advice. He's a tax accountant. And he thought, chalo, friends may poocha and, you know, all that. The next thing he knows, in the mail, the bill came. So It's like, oh my God. So of course the word spread, don't phone him on a personal level and then ask him advice on your tax return. You'll get a bill. So you see, so this Nirurana, you know, he could none it now as a friend, only on the phone, few minutes, whatever advice he gave. There's no need to send a bill, right? So that's why it is Guhya Tamam. People don't know that. Maybe this person was very good to his parents because, you know, they are my parents and I should do. But Nirurana, that's why Nirurana falls under Guhya Taram. And then Guhya Tamam is Rishirana, because this is the most secret knowledge that the rishis have given us, and how many people are in following this path. Okay, so that is this Kritakrityascha Bharata, and Iti, I told you, Iti means this is it. There is nothing further than this. And this is how this Shastra, that's why this chapter, in this chapter itself, there is the complete science of Jiva, Jagat, and Ishwara. And one second, I'm just trying to see if I've missed something. Buddhiman Syat, knowledge by the self, of the self, for the self. And self is capital, Buddhiman Syat, okay? And here in my notes, Avaracharya would have told us, he quoted chapter 4. I didn't say that because Shastra, we are only sticking to chapter 15. But if you remember, or if you go back to chapter 4, the heart of that chapter is 18, I believe. Verse 18. The one who sees action in inaction, and the one who sees inaction in action is Buddhiman. That's why Buddhiman. This action in inaction and inaction in action will also come in chapter 3 when I do it in the Sunday class. So that is what it is. Action in inaction, do you need some more elaboration on that one? Or people understood? No, Tripti didn't. Okay, all right. So I give you Gurudev's examples. Okay, so I'll give you an example. I may go a little bit over today. Sorry about that. So, because I want to complete this. So it's in either Kindle Life or Hasten Slowly. So there was this farmer who every day morning would go walk 10, 15 kilometers to his fields and whole day work in the field. And while going, there was a lake on his way. And one day while going, he saw a man sitting at the edge of the lake and just sitting there doing nothing, you know, just watching. So he thought, okay, well, whatever. When he came back in the evening after a hard day's work, he saw the man again. And he thought, oh, okay, maybe one day he sat. But next day when he went, he saw the man. And again, while coming back, he saw the same man sitting at the same place, watching the same lake. And 15 days this happened. And in those 15 days, the thought that he had was, I am working so hard. I am walking to my field. Then in the field, I'm plowing the field. I'm sowing the seeds. I'm doing this. I'm doing that. Everything. And this guy is just sitting here and doing nothing. Okay. This is the thought that comes to his mind. And he says, what a lazy fellow. He's just sitting doing nothing. And after 15 days, the guy disappears. And this guy also forgets then that this person was there. A month or so later, he gets invited to the city. And then his friend says, oh, there is this art exhibition, which is good. Please don't ask me how the farmer understands art. But yeah, don't ask me that question. But he gets invited to this art exhibition. And he's looking at all the paintings. And suddenly he recognizes one painting. And he says to his friend, you know, this lake is on my way to my field. Every day I see this lake. This is exactly the same one. I recognize it. And he says, who painted this? You know, and the painter is there. And the painter is the one who was sitting there. He recognizes the paint. He said, you were sitting there for 15 days doing nothing. He said, no, I was watching when the sun rose, how the water looks. When the sun is, you know, way up in the sky at 12 o'clock, then how it reflects in the water. And when the sun sets, then how the water looks. This is what I was seeing. So action in inaction. Okay? Get it? So there was, he was also doing action. But this guy, what did he think? He's a lazy fellow. He's just sitting there doing nothing. But he was very well acting. And that's what he painted then afterwards. Now, inaction, action in inaction, and then inaction in action. So action is going on. Puja Gurudev. So look at Swami Tejomayanji also now, right? Morning till evening, there is action, but there is inaction. Why? Because there is no doership. This is what we'll study in chapter 3 now, actionlessness. This is what is called actionlessness. So the action is being seen, dynamic action is seen, and yet the person is not doing anything. Why? Because there is no doership, that person is not getting bound. Action is called an action only when it binds you. And when does action bind you? Is when you have the doership, I am doing and I will enjoy. So if that is absent, the doership and enjoyership is absent, then it is inaction in action. Okay, we'll be talking a lot more about action and inaction in chapter 3. And this is what I have. There's one more point here, vritti vyapti and phala vyapti. Oh, yeah. Okay. So going back to buddhiman syat, etat buddhva buddhiman syat, I told you that the knowledge which gives you an objective experience is mithya. Okay. And one which gives you a subjective experience is true. Fine. Now, this etat buddhva, when you want to see, basically, when we are in the material, let's take the material world first. What is happening? And I've explained this to you before. When I want to see something, I'm taking example of seeing, but it goes for all the five sense organs. So this computer is there. The consciousness from the conscious person goes out, and what is known as vritti vyapti happens. So the consciousness pervades this object and returns back. So this vritti thought is there, and it requires a phala vyapti. This phala vyapti, because the object that is being pervaded by consciousness is inert, it has no light of its own. Phala vyapti has to happen. Phala vyapti is when the light from the reflected consciousness falls on that thought, knowledge occurs that this is a computer. Some of you might find this difficult. Okay. I've explained, this is explained in Atmabodha and all that. Phala vyapti and vritti vyapti, these are two things that have to happen for knowledge in the material world. First, the consciousness has to go out, wrap that object, come back in. This is the technical explanation of how knowledge is happening in the mind. And when it comes in, because the object is inert, it has no light of its own. It needs an external light to illuminate. And that is what phala vyapti is. Whereas in the knowledge of Brahman, when I say aham brahmasmi, that also is a thought. But in the womb of that thought is Brahman, which is self-illumining. So vritti vyapti is there. The thought is enveloping Brahman, but Brahman itself being infinite, it doesn't require phala vyapti. And this buddhva refers to only vritti vyapti, not vritti vyapti and phala vyapti. Okay, one more subtle point I'll tell you and then I'm done. If you want to know finite objects, okay, if you want to see finite objects in the mirror, okay, in a mirror, what will you do? Say I want to see this book in the mirror, then I will hold the mirror in front of it and then I will see. Right? I will say, oh, my face, I want to see finite. But if I want to see in space, which is the thing, infinite thing that we know. As far as we know, space is infinite. If I want to see space in the mirror, then what will I do? What should I do? I will remove all the finite objects from in front of the mirror to see that infinity. Same way, if I want to know a finite object in my mind, I will bring that finite object in front of me, right? But if I want to know infinity, what I need to do is remove all the finite objects from the mind. So these thought modifications are all finite. Why? Because thought is of a finite object. So thought modifications which are there, I have to remove. Once I remove that, infinity will shine by itself. Because infinity has light of its own. The divinity has light of its own. It's very similar to the idea. To see the sun, I only remove the clouds. I do not have to do anything to the sun, or I do not need another source of light to see the sun. So this budhva refers to that sort of seeing. Etat budhva, and such a person who sees infinity by becoming devoid of all the finite objects, all the finite thoughts, is then called buddhiman. Okay. If you have any questions about this, I can answer them next Monday, and we will begin next Monday with our discussion of chapter 15. And after from 16 onwards, I think the teaching is going to be quite simple, much simpler. So I hope you have absorbed. If there are any doubts, questions, you can think, and then you can ask me next time or write to me or anything. Or do you have any questions now?
Jaya ji, it was really, really good, quite deep. Though it has, most of it gone over my head, but nevertheless, it was very, very deep and quite revealing. I have never heard such an explanation, never. So you spend so much time just on one verse. It's recommendable, it really is. Whether I understood or not, maybe some words, maybe not so much, but I do feel something was there. I really do feel something was there.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
It's my guru's grace. And like I said, it really gave me great pleasure to read. That's why I thought, I could have really honestly last time, whatever explanation I gave was enough. It was complete. It was correct. And it didn't sit right with me. I myself felt, you know, that this is not fair to the class, that I'm not this thing, because that day I was really tired and I'd done other verses. So I said, no, I need to spend time. And I'm so glad I did it. I'm so, so, so glad that I did it. So, so that's it. I remembered one thing, which I think I'll share with you. So I was in Toronto and Swami Tejomanji, I think that was the last time that he came to the US, that like the next year he had said he will not be traveling outside of India anymore. So I went to Toronto to like just see him and be with him. And he was doing chapter 15 and I was staying with a friend of mine. And what happened was, it was a 5-day yajna or whatever. So on the second last day, he had completed 19 verses complete. Okay, so only one verse was remaining, and it was a 1.5-hour lecture. And my friend said to me, Jaya, only one verse remaining? Now how? Because you see, in the yajna discipline, he will not finish the last lecture in 15 minutes and say, okay, yajna finish and now Om Purnamada. He will not. And she said, my God, only. And I said, you just wait. He will take 1.5. Every word he dissected exactly at that 9 o'clock or whatever that last minute was. The last pushpika, Om Purnamadam Purnamidam. And she looked at me. She said, I told you, it's Guruji. He's not going to complete it even one. And people will not even feel ke he's extending it. Sometimes, you know, the speaker will repeat things. You know, you look at the time and then you say, oh, there's time. Let me just go over this again, right? No repetition, nothing. Just like the Bhasha, you know, every word, tuck, 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 dissect, dissect, dissect. She said, no, you are right, Jaya. I said, I told you, it's Guruji. There's no way. He knows now that he has complete, needs. There's only one verse to, for 1.5 hours, he has to do one verse. He knows, he will do it. That's what he did. So that's his genius. Anyway, good night. I'm sorry I took a little bit extra time. But next week, we are starting the discussion. So please, whoever has taken verse one, I'm not really sure who it is. Padmaja, is it? Oh, Vinita? Okay, very good. So you will be opening and hopefully we'll all have the correct link now. So there shouldn't be any problems. Okay. Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamadachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Avashishyate Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Hari Om. Hari Om everybody, and